On. Hello, everybody. I hope most of you are back from the break. Can you hear me? Okay, good. And I won't touch it. Well, my name is Miriam Kühne. I just started working at the RIPE NCC in September. Thank you. My name is Miriam Kühne, and I just started working for the RIPE NCC in September. However, some of you might know it's not really fair to say that I'm new to this. I've been standing here before in a different role, or similar role, if you will, 3 years ago. Well, the RIPE NCC has developed a new project or program. It's called RIPE Labs. It's an initiative developed by the RIPE NCC, but really is meant to be a community tool, a tool from the RIPE community for the RIPE community. So I wanted to highlight a few of the goals and benefits and ideas behind RIPE Labs. And then after I'm finished, Robert Kistelecki from the RIPE NCC will show you some examples. And then after that, Franz Schwarzinger will also show you a tool that's on RIPE Labs right now. And then at the end of the session, we'll hopefully have plenty of time for discussion and questions. Well, let's go back in history a bit. Because at first, actually, there was RIPE. There was a RIPE community, as you know. You know, some people just came together and, you know, coordinated their activities, and they met and organized themselves in the early IP days in Europe. And also, I mean, RIPE as a community, like the RIPE, the participants in RIPE organized the activities. You know, someone said, oh, why don't I go off and, you know, write a contact database so we know, you know, where everybody is. And then somebody else offered to host mailing lists, and, you know, somebody else is offering to host the meetings. And so it really was a community effort. And only after a while, you know, after the RIPE community was growing, they decided it would be quite handy to have like a service center or a coordination center that could help with all these services. And that's how the RIPE NCC was born. And then the RIPE NCC took on a lot of these activities, and they you know, maintained what's now known as the RIPE database, and, you know, organized these meetings and many other services that are actually still around today and still are used by many of you today. And only after a while, after the RIPE NCC was known kind of as a trusted, you know, service center and a neutral place for ISPs and operators and others to coordinate the activities, somebody thought, well, why don't we ask the RIPE NCC to also hand out IP addresses in Europe, as at the time that was still done centrally from the US. And only then the RIPE NCC took on the task of an RIR, which is now probably the most, you know, known and prominent activity of the RIPE NCC, but that's really not how it started and what it was initially meant to do, or at least not, it wasn't the only activity. So in a way, RIPE Labs is an attempt to go back to the roots, a bit of RIPE and the RIPE NCC. So what is RIPE Labs? Well, at the moment, it's pretty much just a website, and I'll show you some of it later. And, but it's hopefully becoming a platform for discussion and for presenting new ideas and tools and research results. And and giving feedback to each other on these on the content that's on RIPE Labs. So what can you do on the site? Well, you can test and, you know, look at tools, test them, see how they work if you find them useful. You can also contribute your own research results, your own prototypes, software. You can participate in discussion forums. You can also maybe create your own blog. We'll get back to all these details later. And basically, you can influence what's happening in the NCC, and also what's happening in the community, and participate from an early, early stage on of some of the developments. And at this point, I actually would like to mention Robert Kistelecki, who was the one who came up with this idea initially a few months ago, and has put a lot of effort into getting this started. And also Daniel Karenberg has put a lot of effort into getting this off the ground and helping to set up the initial site and put up content, and he's been very supportive of this project. So why Web Labs? Why is that? Why do you think that's, you know, necessary? As I said, it really is a mechanism for you to, well, for a faster feedback loop, you know, to see first, be the first to see what's going on the WebNCC and in the community. So the WebNCC will use this platform to present, yeah, new ideas we have, new research or, you know, ideas and tools that come out of the science group. And we can publish maybe potential new services or new features of existing services. And the main point here is that, you know, so far I think the WebNCC has often maybe tried to assume what the community wants. And so we went back and developed something, and then we thought it was a great new tool, and we published it. And only then we asked, is that really useful to you and to the membership and to the Web community? With Web Labs, we're trying to come back to the community earlier on. And early on, well, when we have like just an idea or a prototype or, you know, alpha beta versions, will be published there. And then you can give us feedback and say if you find this useful or not. And then based on your feedback, we can we will either develop it further or not, or make it more blue or more green, depending on what you on what your comments and your feedback is. But on the other hand, also you can, you know, use this, as I said, to publish your own ideas and get feedback from the community. Maybe you have some cool research results, you know, you don't know, you know, how to publish them further, or you would like to share with your colleagues in the community. Maybe you have a cool tool that you developed and you want to put on the Web Labs site and share with others, and maybe somebody else wants to pick it up and develop it further. It's open to, you know, any wild ideas you might have. So that pretty much summarizes what I just explained. It's a feedback, it's a faster feedback loop for you to interact with about NTC and also with each other. And yeah, why should you care about this? You know, maybe because it gives you a mechanism or a way to influence directions of some of the developments first from an early start on. And it's really meant to be a community tool, hence it's also called Web Labs and not the WebNCC Labs, for instance. It's WebNCC will use it, but also you will hopefully use it. And there's the URL. You can look at it now. I don't know how it'll act, actually, what happens. We try to foresee like what happens, you know, if many people use it, but we don't know what happens if the whole Web meeting will jump on it at the same time. Just in case, I am happy.
It's
doing fine, Daniel. Thank you. Just so you know, this is like a screenshot of the homepage. You will see there. It doesn't show everything now. It's pretty much just an introduction, and you can see there are some categories, you know, news and tools, and there also is a category with forums, and there are some blogs. I'll just play around on the site and we'll see how you like it, and if you have any comments, let us know. Before you start, you know, playing on the site, I just wanted to highlight some Web Labs rules. Well, first and foremost, it really is open to anybody. All the content can be read by anybody. You don't have to register or to read. Anything can be read. Obviously, you know, we hope you have some civilized discussion and following netiquette rules. If you want to contribute to the site, if you want to leave you know, comments or, you know, post some comments or leave your own ideas, you would like to ask you to register. Before you do that, we'll ask you for a username, and we also ask you for a motivation, like why do you want to participate in Web Labs, and also if you're an LIR, we'll ask you to put that in just to get an idea who the participants are of Web Labs, and that will also help us later to classify the feedback we get. But we treat all this information confidentially, and hopefully motivated enough on the site also what we do with it and why we ask you these questions. We'll have to see how as we go along, but this will at some point also help us to identifying what the members want, what the web community want, and see how we evaluate that feedback. And the other important rule is we really cannot give a lot of service guarantees for what's on the site. I mean, until now, as I said, the WebNCC was always trying very hard to provide full-fledged services to the community, and guarantee that these services are up and running and look pretty all the time and everything. Now this will be different here because a lot of the tools and a lot of the software and also some statistics and articles will be just ideas or prototypes, and they will not be fully fleshed out and ready. And also some of it might be submitted by third parties, so the WebNCC is not in control of that. We will hopefully be able to guarantee that the site is up and running and be there for you to participate, but not necessarily everything that's on the site. However, based on your feedback or based on how things develop and get picked up on the site, some of the things that will be posted there first might become full WebNCC services later, or we take them off if there's no interest, or some other one might pick up an idea that you might find interesting for your own operations. So it really is very much based on community feedback. Well, finally, just a list, just to illustrate you what's currently on WebLab. Some of you already probably see it in front of you. There is quite a lot of stuff on there already. Most of it developed inside the WebNCC for now, just to give you some teasers and some ideas what's possible. There's something called REX, the Resource Explainer, that you'll hear more about that later. There's introduction to the Internet Number Resource Database, where you can actually see what happened to your IP resources in the past, like some historic data. And Robert will show you more about that later. There's a calendaring tool that Hank put up. You can plug in your WIPE meeting appointments, and it's explained there how to use that. And there are some cool eye candies and movies that Robert will show you later. They're just nice to look at. An article on the 16-bit AS number exhaustion Daniel put on. And then finally, there is something called NetSense, which is our next generation information services. And Franz will give you an idea about what that is and what that entails. So if you have any questions now, we can maybe add some until Robert is ready to come up. Otherwise, we'll also have time later. I will also want to illustrate that there is a demo stand outside later, that I will be there after this presentation. And we'll also get some cool t-shirts like this. And if you have any questions or please come by, we will be there and can play on the side and explain you more how it works. Are there any questions now? Otherwise, we'll keep them till the end, if Robert is ready. You're ready? Sure.
There's 50 people on and it's still doing fine.
Very good. I'm glad.
As soon as you send the URL.
Oh, that's what we expected. That's what we hoped for.
So what I'm going to do is, what I'm not going to do, let's just say that, I'm not going to go through all of the bits and pieces of content that we put up there, but I think I'm going to show you a couple of nice and interesting things that was already on the site, and then you can go on and explore on your own and see if you like it. So as a start, you may have heard about INRDB, one of our projects. That's the INRDB, the name is for the Internet Number Resource Database. This is essentially a huge database of Internet Number Resource related data that the Ripen CC collected over the years, and we extended it with other databases as well, from CADA and GeoIP services and Blacklist and so on. And the reason being is that if we want to do historical researches, such as the YouTube event that some of you might actually remember, and similars, we need a good data store that helps us actually dig into information and tap into that information. So the Ripen CC has RIS and TTM and all those beautiful services with a lot of data about the internet. We also have the right database about registrations and all that. So if we could hold that information in the same place, that enables us to do beautiful things with it. So currently, this database contains all of the RIS table dumps over the last 10 years. So if you imagine, that's an immense amount of data. And we are able to query it in real-time speed, so that's pretty good. We also have IANA assignments, just because it helps us in some research. Our IR stats files, those are trivial, but hey, if we have one database, just putting them there. And some other external data sets. So actually, using this enables us to come up with new and cool services, which some of which we actually want to show to you just now. INRDB is accessible through labs already. This is an application that I'm not going to show, so if you just go there, there are example queries. You can dig into the RI or stats files, or I think that maybe even to RIS itself over the past 10 years of history. So you can go on and explore it on your own. Instead, I'm going to start slowly and show you something that's relatively simple to get out of INRDB as a backend, but it's really, well, let's just say it's an eye catcher, I think. What I'm going to show you is resource allocations, as they have been going on over the last couple of years, but I'm going to show you this in a fashion that I don't think you have ever seen before. This is going to be a movie about a race, and the racing cars are actually the RIRs here. So what you're going to see, let me zoom in. What you're going to see is RipenCC, Erin, Apinik, Klapnik, and Afrinik. On this side, you will see the actual laps that they already done. So the movie starts in 2003, end of 2003. The reason being is that's the time when the RIR started to publish the same format of stats files, so that was just easy for us to grab. So this is how many laps they have already done until this time. This is where we join in. Okay, each lap is 1/8. So if you see the cars going faster or slower, that actually resembles the speed of allocations. We also try to express the speed of allocations in /16s per day. It's an arbitrary number because, as you will see, the numbers flying by, that just doesn't make sense. We didn't want to do /32 because those would be just too big numbers. So in any case, at this stage, Afrinik has not even started, right? We are in 2003, and Erin is way ahead of everyone else. So I guess that I will just start the movie, and maybe I will just highlight some interesting points here. And we need some music.
Ah, I did the wrong thing.
You can do this. Maybe you cannot.
Oh, don't you just love it?
Yes! This is supposed to be a stable browser. This is not going to be fun then. But still, the music is on, so that's good. Okay, Havaria plans. Let's see if we have that. Yeah, this is why it's on labs, right? Okay. Is this gonna work? Yes. Ah, finally. There you go. Okay, so now we are on. The race has started. Afrinik is just staying there, just waiting for the others. Mind you, they are going to start in early 2005. So, oh, what's that? Erin is sometimes going backwards. Can you imagine that? They're giving back Andrew space to everyone else. That's impossible to believe, actually. But everyone is wrong, so go Efrenik, go Efrenik. They are going to start soon. But mind you, we are going to transfer them a whole lot of resources just at the start. Yeah, there they go, and immediately almost did one full lap. That's good, that's good. Everyone else is just going round and round. That's good. Crazy. I'll give you the explanations later on. So as the time goes by, you can see that all these cars are just going back and forward. Crazy shit. Okay, Brighton CC speeding up. We are still in 2006 round and round. Okay, there was so mind you, one line here is a slash 10. So just to give you what we have here. Efrenik is trying to make the first lap. They are almost there, they are almost there. You can see in the meantime that the laps, Efrenik is catching up. They are really, really coming up. So, if we can just, you know, go Efrenik, go Efrenik. They will do the first lap soon. Maybe I would have had to introduce... Hey! There we go! Okay. Needs a little push from the other IRs, maybe. Okay, so there's some racing going on. We are in 2008. The movie runs until mid-September 2009. And I can assure you that the final will be... Efrenik is really catching up. At the start, the difference was like 20/8 between the NCC and Efrenik, and now it's only 3. So, that's a fact. And now, look at the NCC, look at the NCC, yes! Oh! It's kind of in a limbo, you know, going back and forth. So, that's what we had. And thank you, Safari. So, the reason why cars go backwards every now and then, you can actually watch the movie yourself as many times as you want on labs. Unless you're using Safari. So the reason why the cars every now and then go back is because we are just looking at the stats files as they are published daily. And if Jeff was standing up here, he would have said that we are using the linear first order derivative of whatever function there. So the point is we're trying to measure the speed of allocations. And if an RIR gives back address space to Ayana or to another RIR, that means that that space is gone from their stats files. It immediately appears, or at some point appears in another RIR stats file. So Erin, in this case, went back a number of times because of ERX, right? Some ERX space was taken out from their stats files and then put into someone else's. Also, the Ripen CC sped up at the very end. That was because of 51/8, I believe. It just appeared in 2008-9-ish. So there are reasons for this. I'm not claiming that the movie is perfectly accurate, but it's pretty close to reality. So moving on. Oh yeah, I wanted to have another movie actually. Let's see which one. This will not have sound. NCC and routed. Yep. Okay. So what you're going to see here is the address space as managed by the Ripen CC. The blue bars, so each bar is a /8. Okay, on the left-hand side, you can see which /8 it is. On the right-hand side, you can see how full it is already. This movie also starts in 2003. And you can see that the green bars are the ones that Ayana allocated or assigned to the NCC already. So as time goes by, we will see more and more green bars popping up. The blue ones are the allocations or assignments that the NCC did, and the red ones are the routing entries, routing table entries. So coming back to INRDB, the way we did this is that we went through the whole 10 years of history of routing, and we tried to apply that onto such a movie, to each frame of this. So the size of the chunks that you can see and the position of them actually represent the position and size of that prefix. Come on, don't go sleep. Okay, so let's just check that this will not have sound. So we start in 2003, and you can immediately see the address space is just flying off. We made, for example, here an allocation. Okay, let me pause here for a second. What you see here is roughly in May 2004, we received four new slash aids, and immediately there are chunks of address space out of it and advertised in the routing system. That's, of course, the debugonizing effort. So this is actually a pattern that you will see. As soon as a new green bar pops up, the debugonizing effort kicks in, and we start to advertise some part of it. And as soon as we start allocating from that slash 8, or just, you know, a couple of days before that, it goes away. So you can see that pattern. And you can also see that our reserve was like down to less than 2 slash 8, so we got the new allocation from IANA, which is immediately tagged again. So that's all nice and good. And this is going on at a scary rate, actually, because if you just see that the days are going by and flying by. So in the interest of, this is interesting, a whole slash 9 was gone in early 2006. This is, I believe, France Telecom. And though you can also see that they are not advertising much of it. Not yet, anyway. But it's, as time goes by, it will grow. This movie does not contain 2 slash 8s that we just recently had. That's 2 slash 8 and 46 slash 8. So those are missing. Let me just fast forward here a minute. 2008, 2009. So you can see that the free space that we have, which is again the green stuff, is going away rapidly. And the movie stops like here, mid-September, and you can see that we have roughly 2 slash 8, 3. Well, you can get the exact number if you want. And this is where we receive the new slash 8s from IANA. Okay, so that was, I think, enough about movies. There are a couple of other movies on the website as well, so please feel free to explore. Coming back to our original schedule. Okay. The other bigger project that I really want to show you, and we are getting a bit more serious here, is the so-called resource explainer. You can read the article on Labs, but I'm going to give you a different presentation about it. I'm going to show you what it's capable of, so that you can explore on your own at some point. Now, you could go ahead and start hammering our application servers now, but if you could wait for like half an hour until I finish my presentation, then it would be really nice. So what is it? The Resource Explainer is a new service that we're thinking and we think that it's going to be really useful for all of the community. So therefore, we started to explore this, and therefore it is a very good candidate for RAP Labs, because we are not yet sure where is this going to go, but we are pretty sure that the idea itself is really good. So the idea itself is, based on community needs, we saw a lot of emails flying by, mostly on Nanog, saying, oh, look at this resource, and wouldn't it be nice if I knew everything about it before I actually received it or from Erin? Or maybe Erin knew everything about it before they gave it to me, because it's just dirty, for whatever definition of dirty. So we have been thinking about a service that actually explains these resources and gives you the whole history of it. Where has it been used? Was it allocated? How was it routed? Is it in some blacklist, spam lists, and so on? So this idea came from our colleague René Willem, and we just explored it, and we think that we are pretty good, okay with it. There are a number of reasons why you would want to do this. One of the expectations is that transfers are going to happen at some point, maybe not. I'm not going to go into that debate. But if I was a LIR who is willing to buy or rent or get some resources from another LIR, I would like to know if that resource is actually clean enough for me. Because if it's in all of the blacklists and spam lists, then I'm not going to be a happy LIR. So that's one of the reasons. You may just want to dig into history and see how a specific resource was used over time. So again, the idea is we want to make one service that gives you everything you need to know about those resources. It's a one-stop shop. So let's try to do that again, alive. This allows me. Yes. Okay, I have a couple of examples that I collected for myself, and maybe I should just expand this. Okay, first, a guided tour about the RIPES NCC's own slash 21. I chose this because we know this, we can be kind of familiar with it, but so it gives us a pretty good introduction of what we are going to see. So what you see here is a number of tabs which show you the different aspects of the resource that we can tell you. So you can see here for yourself who is responsible on IR, who we think the current holder, or sorry, I shouldn't use the word current. So who we think that the holder is, how was it routed, what do we know about DNS and reverse DNS, was it active on the network, is it in any kind of blacklists or spam list, and where is it located in terms of geolocation. For all of these tabs, we have two sections, the most recent information and the historical information. So you can see that the greenish part of it is actually the current state as it is now, or whatever, however you define now. You can specify your own time frame if you want. And the blue section at the bottom tells you the history of it. So if we just start up with the RIPE NCC prefix, what we can see is as of, when was that? 2 days ago, which is pretty recent. As of 2 days ago, an exact match was found in the routing system originated by AS3333, so the RIPE NCC, that's good. No more specifics, no less specifics, so that's okay. Oh, by the way, you can read all the, for all the pages, you can read the methodology. So if you're unsure what you're seeing, you can always click here, expand it, and read it out to check, well, what is this really? But you don't have to, you can just go ahead and jump into the details. So during the history, which is pretty stable, I can say, what we see here is that AS3333 has been announcing this forever. Mind you, the time scale is 10 years here. And you could actually see, and you will see a number of times, that the actual loading time of the page was like a second or two, maybe. Interestingly enough, we started with S/22, and well, whenever we have the data for, and around this time, we actually switched over to our own /21. Now, there is this interesting thing here. What is this? This is 193/8, announced by AS3352. So who are they? Currently, we don't have the AS type reports and the IPv6 type of reports, so that's coming. But of course, we can find out who these guys are. So AS3352 is Telefónica, España. Are you here? No, they're not. Okay.
They don't come to Portugal.
Maybe. Or they just didn't want to hear me saying this. Anyway, so interestingly enough, at some point, they announced the whole /8 to the internet. Okay. Well, if that makes them happy, fine. So let's explore the other tabs. Who is the responsible RIR for the RIPE NCC's own prefix? Well, that's a good question, isn't it? So current state. Responsible RIR as seen in the IANA. That's fine. So the IANA says it's ours. That's good to know. Responsible RIRs as seen from the RIPE NCC's own measurements. So this is the registration data quality measurements that I actually showed you at the previous meeting in Amsterdam. We are abusing that to actually show to ourselves and to the community where the resources are according to these measurements. So what you see here is the history according to IANA and according to us. Now, the gaps here are just artifacts because we just don't have the data, unfortunately. I must say really thanks to Jeff, who was giving us a hand for collecting historical IANA data, and Leo as well. But we still miss pieces of IANA assignments pages. So if anyone has them, just let me know, please. So besides that, assume that you know there is data here, it's pretty constantly with RIPE NCC, and our own measurements also say the same. Our own measurements start in mid-2004, so we don't have anything before that. That's why the gap is there. Okay, moving on. Who is the resource holder for this resource? Well, let's look at it. This, as it is today, data coming out of the RIPE database. It's a slightly interpreted form, so we try to make some sense for the data, so you don't have to be able to recognize and interpret who is data pieces. And we intend to expand on this in a graphical form. So what you see here is really a prototype. We will work on it a bit more. More interestingly, how was it historically? So what we show here is the maintainers of different objects, well, different size prefixes in the RIPE database. And you can pretty much see that it has been stable during the last time. So, but there have been times where we had different maintainers. So that's all good and well. DNS, reverse DNS. So I'm giving you the tour. DNS and reverse DNS is a data set that comes from CADA originally. What it really is CADA is doing constant measurements. What they do is they fire trace routes all over the place on basically semi-random addresses, and they record each hop along the way. They translate that to DNS names, so they have the IP address, they look it up, so they have names for it. And we put all that information behind this Rex thingy into INRDB, and that's what we are extracting. So therefore, what you see here is a pretty good overview of what kind of hosts have been seen throughout history. So this part is exactly that. So how much of how many hosts and how that was covered over time, how many .NETs and .orgs have been in this space. Interestingly enough, this is right, and this is all on space. We also have, in an expandable form, the history of these objects as they were in the right database. So, for example, this is the /8, the 193/8. This is the covering object for RIPE and CC's own stuff. And you can see that, yep, there was a change from OPS 4 RIPE to RNDS RIPE in 2008. Maybe it's more interesting. So, originally, this object was created by someone who's called DK58. And it has changed to AP110. Who they are is left as an exercise for the reader. You may have good guesses about that. Okay, moving on, network activity. This shows, this is coming from the same CADA data set. This shows if they have seen active hosts in that in those particular /24s. So now we are looking at the /21, which is from 0 until 7.255. And in these /24s, they have actually seen at least one answering, at least one host answering to a trace route. So it was measured. The .2 is missing here from here, and that's practical. I think that's because it's behind the firewall. So that's just one. You can see that, well, this is a whole history. I will zoom in at some point. But you can see that how it changed over time. So how much of this space was actually seen active, again, in the CADA measurement. We intend to expand this with other active measurement data sets, but for now we have CADA, which is pretty okay. Blacklists. So current state says that the RIPE NCC's own address space has a host in it, which is blacklisted in the UCE Protect, one of the UCE Protect databases. Something for ops to look at. But it's already a good information for us because I don't know if we have would have spotted it anyway. But we can also look at the history and we can check that, well, yeah, it was added in the last day, so it's not that bad. Finally, geolocation. Geolocation, again, it has the same structure. What is true now? So the most recent stuff is that 100% of this prefix is in Holland. That's good to know. And actually, it is in Amsterdam. No magic here, Google Maps, everyone knows that. And how it changed over time, this is also interesting. The GeoIP information comes from MaxMind, they have an available data set, so we're just putting that on, and we intend to get more historical data for that. So what we can see here is that it hasn't changed at all. Okay, it has always been in Amsterdam, that's good. So this is the basics. Right. We also have a printable version, so if you want to look at all the pages, you want to print them because you want to hand them over to your boss, you can do that. Okay, that was easy. So let's look at a bit more interesting things. The RIPE NCC's bigger block, so this is the whole NCC block, which also covers KRoot, it also covers the RIPE meetings. So what we start with is the routing history of it. And again, this is 10 years of routing history. Let me show this to you again because it's so cool. Was it 3 seconds? Something like that. So 10 years of routing history. What we can see here is a lot. Just to highlight some of these. We can see that this, I believe this is brown, right? Because I don't really see the brown. Okay, the brown stuff, .8/22, which is the RIPE NCC meeting prefix. Well, somewhere until 2003-ish, it has been announced by different AS numbers, which is perfectly fine because we have been to different places. So who is AS766? Well, 766, who are those guys there? Again, this will be an integral part of the report, but for now I can just look it up. And that's Spain. Interestingly enough, at that time, the RIPE meeting was in Barcelona. Surprise, surprise. Coming back, so we can see that, well, for a while that it has changed aliases, but after we actually just, you know, changed our behavior and we have our own AES number, which announces the RIPE-NCC meeting prefix. But you can also see that the actual RIPE-NCC meeting prefix got bigger at some point. So from a slash 22, it switched over to a slash 21 here. Oh, that's great. Okay, so what's this? There is a prefix here which stopped, but coincidentally, a number of other prefixes popped up. Well, you will actually recognize the numbers there better than I will, and this is the K-root instance. So for a while, it was stably announced from one single AS, and then we switched over to our own K-root AS. I believe this is Lynx.
This is Lynx.
Yeah, that's Lynx, right. We switched over to our own ASs, and we changed the behavior. Well, this was the time when we introduced Anycast, right? So it's kind of clear how that goes over time. AS333, it has been stable, rock solid, right? And it started to announce more and more prefixes as time went by. So what this illustrates is that you can get a lot of data with a couple of clicks, and then you can make sense out of it, hopefully. I'm not going to go into these. That's not that interesting. Geolocation. Oh, geolocation. That must be fun. So where are these guys? Okay, so we can see that almost all of it is in Holland, that's fine. As of now, again, this is the current history. Some part of it is in London, that's Lynx still. Now, if someone can tell me where root in Holland is, that would be really nice, according to Maxman. That's a secret, okay, that's... well, this GUIP provider just says, well, this is root in Holland, so... I didn't know about the city, but maybe I'm just ignorant. Okay, what we can see is this has been true forever, ever since we know this data. Okay, let's look at more interesting prefixes. I.rootservers.net. Since we finished this tool like a week ago, well, finished, we reached a stage where we can actually show it to you. Daniel jumped around like a kid and said, look, 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 I can find this, I can find that. So I'm going to show a couple of examples that he has found. For example, iRoot is one of them. You can see the history of them, that it has changed providers from here to here to here, and we can actually look up who they were. I'm not going to go into all of these details now, because that would be just too much time. But what you can see here is, oh, those guys again, AS3352. So they have been here as well. I think that this actually shows us that the blue one, the green one is the slash 23, the blue one is the slash 24, so they actually started to use Anycast at this point. That's cool. K.rootservers.net. Okay, 10 years of routing history again. This is pretty clear again. On the right-hand side, we have some measurement artifacts, don't mind them. But you can see that, well, yeah, these two prefixes have been announced in parallel. So this is, again, Anycast in action. And the Spanish guys are here. They are everywhere. Okay, a.rootservers, this is VeriSign. And I'm only looking at the routing page, right? So I didn't go into all of the details. You can do that if you want. Now, this is interesting. If someone can actually explain what's going on here, I would be really happy to hear that. Because both of these ASs are VeriSigns, as far as I know. Maybe this third one as well. But they seem to have like jumping around from AS to AS and back and forth. But that's fine. And look, the Spanish are here. Okay. Oops, I clicked twice. Not a problem. The system can just handle it. Okay, finally, m.rootservers. The Spanish are there as well. Can you imagine that? This is actually in Tokyo, I believe, because this is wide. But they are here. They are everywhere. Okay. Google.com. Let's see what we know about them. They actually received a shiny new prefix at some point. At this point, which I can actually look at. Somewhere 2006, yes. And they started to announce that on the internet. That's fine. The Spanish are here. Before that, it was used by someone else, so this huge gap actually shows us that for a couple of years, this prefix was not visible on the internet, right? So it has been reallocated. Oh, okay, that's cool. Moving on, more interesting things, DNS neighborhood. We'll ask the question, this is a quiz, who recognizes this prefix? Yeah, okay. No one does, I can tell you. Well, actually, you will be able to figure it out yourself if I show you what domains are in there, right? SourceForge thingy, SourceForge slash dot. Of course, these are the guys. This is the same company. So it's a different, it's the same DNS neighborhood. Okay, moving on. A very Dutch ISP. I think that this prefix will be more recognizable to some of you. So they have been active, it seems. So this is the current state again. If we look at history, these are the cities they have been active in. Right, fair enough. Nothing magical here. Their DNS, their routing, their blacklist. That's going to be interesting. So if you didn't recognize, this is Access for All. And they have 34 resources in blacklist currently. And this is how it went over time. They really had some bad customers, I guess. So this is some information that they could use as well. You can actually monitor your own prefixes. And I imagine that the first use cases will be everyone will be just looking up their own prefixes. That's fine. There was a mail, just a couple of examples. There was a mail to Nanog saying, we obtained this shiny new block, but it has been cursed because it is in some blacklist. Now, a shiny new block received from Erin, and it is already in blacklists. Well, that just happened. So these guys had to clean it up, and just to show what happened there, this is their effort of cleaning it up. So they've been trying to do that. That's fine. Unfortunately, we don't have enough data to do this. This was one of the initiative messages, the very early ones that we actually looked at when we thought about this service. So there is this ISP somewhere in the Erin region who received a shiny new block from Erin, and well, they started to see weird things happen. For example, this is a quote from the email: Google.com comes up in Spanish. Akamai sends traffic to somewhere else, and none of the credit card transactions are accepted. Now, that's a bummer if you really want to run a website where you want to sell stuff and process credit cards. So apparently, this block was registered in Chile. But these guys, well, the point here is that if the hostmasters in Erin did have access to such a service, they could have checked the state of this resource before they gave it out. Okay, and finally, just to close this off, we received two new /8s from Ayana. So the question immediately popped up, like, okay, what do we know about them? So let's see, what do we know about them? Obviously, the main question is, are they used or have they been used? Okay, currently, RIPE NCC RIS-AS number is used, which is good because that's our standard way of doing it. But 10 years of history shows that even though this block was not allocated, there are bits and pieces popping up everywhere. Okay, and I'm pretty sure that the Spanish are here as well. Yeah, it's them. Okay, well, it just happens. So if we zoom in to the last month or so, then we see, yep, deep organizing. Good. So this is how it's supposed to be. We start announcing some prefixes out of it, so that's good. And just to close this off, are the other /8 that we received. You can click through all of these pages yourself, that's fine. It's a bit cleaner, but we can see bits and pieces popping up recent times. So that's it. I encourage you to go ahead and explore this tool, check your own prefixes if you want, or someone else's for that matter. You can dig up a lot of interesting history here. So, yep. Further plans with this, we do want to add AES numbers and IPv6 support. The problem with those are that we have much, much less useful data for v6 than for v4. But we will do whatever we can to make this useful. We do want to specialize this to different user groups. So the expectation is that our own IPRAs can start using this to check the prefixes before they hand it out. But that's just one use case. An ISP is interested in a different aspect, or law enforcement is interested in yet another aspect. So we think that we will just specialize it to different user needs. And you can select, I'm an ISP and I want to route this customer. Give me what's important for me. I am law enforcement. I want to know how to shut them down. So that's the focus. But the data is essentially the same, but the presentation can be a bit different. We do want to add more aspects and more details to existing ones. So for example, resource certification is coming, at least we think it's coming. So expect that at some point we can have a new tab that explains the certification history of this specific prefix. And more importantly, we want to hear your feedback. Do you find this useful? Does it work for you? Does it help you? And please start exploring it and put your comments back into the forums. And that's it for now. Any questions?
Thanks. This is on? Oh, you said this was on. This is not on. Oh, hello, hello. Yes. Thanks, Robert. Franz, where are you? Do you want to come up and go on? I think we'll keep questions until the end. Otherwise, I'm afraid we won't have time for Franz's presentation.
Hello, I'm Franz Schwarzinger. I'm gonna show you something new that we made also as part of Ripe Labs, which is called Ripe NCC NetSense. NetSense is all about measurements that we do at the Ripe NCC, be it active measurements, passive measurements, and we really, really want to make those the data that is generated from those measurements more easily accessible for you. But before I'm going to show you this exciting new thing, I want to give you a little bit of history. How did it all start? How did it all begin? Well, quite a long time ago, almost exactly 19 years ago, the first host count was published. This was basically just a count of DNS hosts in Europe, and it looked like that. Very, very, very simple. But what is interesting about this, this has actually not been done by the Ripe NCC, but by Ripe. By the Ripe community at the time, which was very young. A few years later, Ripe NCC was founded, and already as part of the Ripe NCC, the Routing Information Service has been born. Routing Information Service, also known as RIS, is a massive collection of BGP routing data. Nowadays, we have 16 collectors around the globe, and actually a lot of data that you saw in Robert's INRDB presentation comes from that from that measurement service. And today, altogether, we have more than a terabyte of data collected. Then in 2000, a year later, we launched a test traffic measurement service, which is more of an active measurement tool. And we do highly accurate measurements around the globe. And we can do that because we have specialized hardware equipped with GPS clocks, which allow us to do one-way delay measurements, which is the only service on the planet that can do that. And in 2004, we launched a DNS monitoring service. This was born out of the root servers. The root server operators wanted their servers to be monitored, but these days we also monitor top-level domains. More recent history, in 2006, Information Services was founded. This was an attempt of the Ripe NCC to bring all those measurement services into one place, into one team that can work really on this and focus only on those measurement services. And we did quite a few improvements over the years. One thing, we simplified TTM pricing, which was very well received, and we got a lot of new subscribers. We put in a lot of work into making the backend faster and more resilient. We developed a few new tools to access the data, such as the RIS dashboard and a new host count user interface. And we massively expanded our network to span the globe. And I'm very happy to say today that we are now spanning 6 continents. The only one missing is the Antarctica. And yeah, that's very nice. But all together, we are still a little bit missing the wow factor behind all those things. So last year, we started to get some help from outside. And we found a very nice company based in Amsterdam, just very close by to our offices, called Sunny Day. And one of the first things we did with them, we started to catalog our entire portfolio, which turned out to be more than 30 tools and services, and try to make kind of sense out of them. And this is what we came up with. It's basically two axes. On the top, we have we categorized everything in things from operational to strategic. That's basically our user needs. On the operational side, you want to monitor things. You want, as a network engineer, you want to be alarmed. My network is not working anymore. Do something about it. After something like that happened, you want to diagnose it. Why did it happen? Where did the problem start? How can I avoid it in the future? And more on the strategic side, then we have forecasts. So how fast is IPv6 growing? And things like that. On the other axis, we have the things that we offer you. And on the very bottom, we have data sets. Those are very, very critical for our operation. Without data sets, we can't offer you anything, really. On the next level, we have tools which allow you to access this data. And on the third level, we have analysis services, where we would come, look at this, look at some of the data, and provide a report about it. Again, on the bottom, the data set is very, very important, the fundamental basis. And then on the top, we found out that the tools are very important for the monitor and diagnose part, and the forecast and diagnose part is very important for the analysis services. But yeah, those two axes are very nice and very good for us to know, but what is really important for you is that there is a third axis, and the third axis are actually you guys, our users. So we did a little bit of an analysis of our stakeholders, and we came up with seven groups of our most important stakeholders, our most important users, and we put them again into this diagram. And what we found out is that, well, the data sets, again, very fundamental. There are a few user groups that want to have direct access to the data sets, but really where the where most of our users are clustered are here and here. The top part being more governments and journalists, and the bottom part more technical people, ISPs, people from ISPs. And for our first version of NetSense, what I want to show you today, we decided to focus on this middle part. We do that because we saw that most of our very important user groups, and especially you guys who come to the RIPE meetings, are really in those two boxes. So what else did we do with stakeholders? We did interviews with you at the last RIPE meeting. We interviewed about 20, I think, so people from different companies, different industries, and tried to figure out how they like our current measurement efforts, how we can improve them. And we got amazingly good feedback from you, and it's very nice. And the four biggest parts: we need more user-friendly tools. We need to present our information better. We need more global overviews. That was especially something that came from the government. And people wanted more like drill-down approaches, so that you can see a very high-level overview, but then get into the details by clicking around. And yeah, really, I would like to thank you all a lot who participated in that and gave us this wonderful feedback. Another thing that we saw from our stakeholder interviews was that our risk dashboards that we have at the moment are very well accepted. People like them. But a bit of a problem with them, they have a lot of information. As you can see here, there's a lot of different things where you can click on and go to. You have to read a lot. And then once you get to some data, it's a little bit cluttered, and you have a lot of stuff, and you don't really know where it comes from. It's a little bit too much, and yeah, it's not very pretty. It's not so sexy. It's not wow. The first thing we wanted to do was make the user experience much better. And a very, very first thing that we did, a first draft of this whole thing, was this. Again, it's not pretty, but it gives you kind of the idea where we started with. On the top left, we have an overview of prefixes. Very simple list showing you which prefixes are announced by OAS. Then naturally, going from the left to the right, we show information about a specific prefix. Once you click on one prefix, you'll see the information, stability, visibility information. And on the bottom, we have this space reserved for information that is about the whole AS. And you could see a consistency check. But yeah, as I said already, it's not really very pretty. But we thought this user flow would work very well. And we had the feeling that by doing it that way, we could easily extend it in the future and add new things to it. So, but yeah, the really nice thing is coming now. NetSense, how it looks today, actually, after months and months of hard work, and you're the first people to see it right now. So behold, this is NetSense. Thank you. Yeah, so you see it's the approach is similar to what I showed you in the picture before, but now it's actually pretty. And I'd like to show it to you live. I hope it works. Where is it? Firefox. I was going to use Safari, but since I saw the presentation before, So what do you do? You go to netsense.rive.net, and we actually start off with an overview. How is the internet doing today? We're taking the data from our TTM network. We select boxes from all of the continents. Now that we have this nice coverage, we can actually do that. And look at the relative loss between nodes on those continents. And you can see the internet is doing pretty fine today. It's all green, all 100%, which means hardly any loss happened in the last 24 hours. What you can then do, if you're a network operator, you can go to this box up here and enter your IS or prefix. I'm just going to enter the RIPE NCC prefix for now and click the Sense button. Let's see what happens. So, as I showed you before, on the left side we have a list of prefixes that are announced by the RIPE NCC. And in this picture, you actually see at the moment, like it shows up here, you see the visibility of the AAS that you entered. So you, whatever you enter, you will always in the map first see what you actually wanted to see. And in this case, it's visibility. And you can also click on the map and zoom in, see where all this data really comes from. So we have this drill-down approach that you people asked us to do. And also, you might want then to look more into what is actually happening with those prefixes. So let's have a look at this one, maybe. You click on it, the map refreshes, and we see, 193/21 is perfectly visible everywhere. If we look at the other ones, we will see that the IPv6 prefix is not as visible as others. So that's where the less visibility from our global overview came from. If we scroll down a bit, we have the part about the whole AS, and for our first version we put here a new and improved routing consistency check. And what it does basically, it looks at your routing information in the RIPE database, and it looks at the BGP routing tables and compares them. And here you can say that it looks pretty okay. Only the IPv6 one doesn't work here. And you can sort those tables, you can filter here on the left side, and you can also switch between your prefixes, import and export peers. This is pretty much it for now. We built this user interface in a way to be very extensible, so we are going to add new features in the future. For now, it's a very nice first version, I think. So let me go back to this. This was the demo. RIPE Labs, how does it tie in? Well, we're launching this NetSense this week via RIPE Labs, and it will be available to all of you sometime tomorrow. At the moment, you can find a nice screencast there. You can watch it and look through all the features that are there, and you'll hear me explaining a little bit more about it. And NetSense also really, really, really needs your feedback. We want to improve it. We showed you a very, very first version at the moment, but we want to improve it further, and we need your feedback to tell us what kind of information are you really interested in. So try it out, watch the screencast, participate in the RIPE Labs forum. There's a post on RIPE Labs showing, explaining NetSense in a bit more detail, and you have a forum attached to it where you can participate in discussion. And you can also send us an email to netsense@ripe.net. And if you want to get a little bit more into the technical details behind NetSense, I would invite you to come to the test traffic working group tomorrow, and we're going to show you a bit more about this. This was it from me. If you have any questions now, or maybe Miriam wants to keep them to the end.
This is the end.
This is the end.
Thank you. Thank you, Franz, and thank you, Robert. Well, we have some time for questions now. If you do have questions either about RIPE Labs as a whole or about some of the stuff that's on there at the moment, I see some of you already registered and participated and left comments on the site. It's very good. And I'll get back to that later on the site itself. No questions, no comments. Was it all crystal clear? Out. You're all stunned and overwhelmed and or hungry maybe. Wanna go for lunch? Oh yes, there will be t-shirts out there. There's a demo stand out there that I will be at during the lunch break, but also during every morning break throughout the week. And I will be there and some of my colleagues will be there from time to time. We can show you a bit more what's on RIPE Labs. But if you come by just after the session, you will there will be some brochures and also a t-shirt if you want to pick up a t-shirt there. I can't believe there is not a single question. I'm not sure if I should be happy about this or or disappointed. Okay, I'm happy then. Dennis says I should be happy. So, all right. Well, thank you very much then for your attention and enjoy your lunch break.
Very good.